For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
I'm going to do a little overview of our view on missions, and then we're going to have a series of speakers come up and talk about their part in it today. First thing I'd like to just remind us of, I know I don't need to emphasize this too much with this group, it's just the theology of missions in the Bible. You know, right from the earliest book in the Bible, we find that God is a missionary God and that He's got a plan to launch a great world mission to reach all peoples. What He said to Abraham, that through him all of the families of the earth would be blessed. And so we see that in 2000 BC, and we can really even go further back than that, here this plan was launched, and it embraces all the peoples of the earth. Even in the New Testament, there's no difference. And when the Holy Spirit commissioned Paul and Barnabas, He said, "Set apart Paul and Barnabas for the work to which I have called them." The work of missions is not our, that's not our decision. That's not our philosophy. It's God says, "That is my work that I'm calling you to." And so people that put down missions or disparage missions are disparaging the work of God. We know that in addition to knowing the theology of missions and preaching and teaching that, and we could cite many more passages on it, it's important to mobilize the church, because missions is not a matter of a small elite within the church that practice missions. But the entire church needs to be energized and mobilized and focused in order to get a good, strong missions thrust. We've been working on this with our fellowship now for over 25 years, probably about 30 years since we started to intentionally try to mobilize our church for missions. Things like education help people understand a lot of problems that we have. Here is just ignorance of the scope of the need, the depth of the need, the desperate nature of the situation that we're in. Even in our own country, which is our first mission field, Barna counts 85 to 88 million Americans who never have anything to do with a church. Even though on a national social survey, they would say they're a Christian, a lot of them. The fact is they never go to church, they have nothing to do with it, there's no indication that they're Christians at all. And so that would be, that group right there would be the fifth largest country in the world, right here in our own country. You know, bigger than England, bigger than France, big. That's a lot of people that are need to be reached with the gospel. And so part of our mission work starts right here in our, you know, flagship work. We're reaching lost people in Columbus, Ohio. We brought in the Perspectives in the World Christian Movement class, which is still offered about every other year here. It's been offered every other year since 1982 or so when we first brought it in at the urging of Ralph Winter. A great class to take to really get the scope and of missions, the strategy of missions, and to really equip yourself in this area. And then, of course, we've also used extensively short-term trips. Hundreds of our members have gone on short-term trips to various countries and seen for themselves the work there. And the main reason for these trips, yes, they do work and serve, and so that's good, but the main reason is really for the people going on the trips. It's really a visionizing trip for people to get vision for how awesome and needed this work is, and for how I could possibly play a part in it. In missions, we have senders and goers, and we need more senders than we have goers. The expenses on this are significant. And and unless we get the broad swath of our church, you know, locked into on this and focused on it, we're going to be weak and we're going to be meager. But if we all band together, we can put forth a mighty missions effort. We have to overthrow postmodern assumptions that are rife in our culture and which we have every reason to believe are going to start seeping into our church. It hasn't been that bad in our church yet, although I have just recently heard a couple of young people saying that they thought the idea of missions sucked. And these were Christian members of home churches here. So we clearly have to be, that's the postmodern view, is that missions is nothing but Western cultural imperialism, that this is nothing but exploitation and proselytizing. And we need to take that point of view on head on, you know, and its underlying assumptions that there is no objective truth, that truth doesn't matter, that people that are not Christians are in just as good a shape as people who are Christians, which is not true. That God would never judge, he's too nice to judge anybody, and all these people are going to end up in heaven anyway, which is not true. And we need to be firm and unwavering on the truth there, again, that the Holy Spirit says the work that I have called them to do. This is the Holy Spirit that people are putting down when they put down missions. In addition, then, finally, another way we can move on this is supporting indigenous groups or missionaries, something we're engaged in our fellowship. Corporately, we have about 40 plus, there's over 40 full-time missionary families that we support as a church entirely, that we are the sole source of their financial support. About 20 of these workers are in Cambodia, and there's over 20 in Southeast Asia and another country that have been sent, trained, deployed, and are supported by us. These are people who are not pastors of local churches. These are people who are church planters who go from town to town like an apostle, introducing the gospel, forming churches, and moving around. And so they're often not in a position to be supported by, like they would be if they were a pastor of a church, then their own church should support them, and we believe in that. We also have an unknown number of other full-time missionaries that are supported from here as individuals and cell groups and home churches have just decided to take on various barefoot pastors and so forth. I support one, and I think many people do, and we've never been able to count that. A lot of this is paid for through the Humanitarian Aid Fund. We have sums in there, like the Pursat province support. If came out this week and heard Yoka speak, she was talking about the great launch they've had into this completely, entirely unreached, vast province of Pursat. That was almost all funded by Xenos. And we are committed to continue to fund that mission work and the 20-plus workers that have gone in there. Yeah, Yoka. We're doing it in Southeast Asia, where really what we have in Southeast Asia is a missionary sending base in that country, training indigenous local people in missions, and then launching them into a completely unreached people group there, a vast field that had no witnessing church when we got there about 15 years ago, and now there's hundreds of converts in that area. India Gospel League is a group we've partnered with for almost 10 years now as well. A real solid group that is doing awesome work in India. and who send out barefoot pastors who can be supported for like $1,200 a month, pays the expenses of the missionary, his family, and an administrative fee for their materials and so forth to in the gospel. $100 a month. They will go out and they only support that missionary for 2 years. By the third year, they will have planted usually two churches, and those churches take over their support as they go to plant their third church. So it's a great program, well worth looking into. They've got a website that explains how they do it, and they have many other. One of the great things about this organization, too, it's not just evangelism. They're holistic. They have literacy training. They have job and career training, health work, clean water, which is a huge problem in these villages where everybody's sick from the water and sewer and programs, and micro lending, which you can just, like I just took $150 and put it up there, and that's going to be lent to women to start a little stall, and then they'll repay it, and it'll be loaned to another woman, and it will just be continually reloaned to different people for their survival. What a great use of $150. Then there's sending, where we send from here. We are sending church. A lot of people would be surprised to hear how many dollars we have spent on sending in this church since we started in the 80s. We just recently had occasion to add it up. It's now over $20 million. So we've got a little bit of mobilization going in our church. And I think we can feel gratified that God's moved people to give that much in our church. And right now we're lined up, the way things are lined up right now, in the next 10 years, it looks like there'll be another 20 given in this coming decade. So the curve is still turning upward, and it costs a lot for this work. We want to see our effectiveness grow. We're a learning church. We're not experts on this. And we've made some mistakes. We made quite a few, as a matter of fact. I don't know whether that always happens or not, but we're not daunted by it. We're not going to stop. And we need to find out how we can be effective and more effective. And we're working on it. Right now, we're going to send another couple, John and Ruth. Why don't we get them to stand up, and let's have a look at them. There we are, right over here. When they get ready to ship out of town, we'll probably have a formal bringing forward to lay hands on them and all that kind of stuff. Right now, they're going to be raising support, and you're going to be asked to help them. And I think a bunch of us should, particularly on the servant team, where nearly half of us have not yet partnered with a missionary. I think 40% of us have yet to throw in on this, at least in a formal mission team. So I'd love to see 100% of the servant team teamed up with a missionary, and you really need to do this and get the mailings and be a part of the prayer team and the support team. We also have gotten involved in domestic sending, and we have Joe and Aaron McCallum trying to plant groups in the outlying areas around Columbus. That's been going on for about a year, and people have been won. We're getting another group started out in West Jefferson this week, today in fact. They're starting another group there. Another area that we've been pushing into increasingly recently is the refugee ministry, where, in a sense, the mission field is brought to us. The foreign mission field comes here. And Columbus has resettlement offices for refugees coming into the United States. Danny Walker has kind of led the path here, and all of the workers from several of spheres are engaged deeply in ministering to Bhutanese refugees, and we're also trying to get in with Somali refugees and other populations. They come here with nothing. They need an American to sponsor them and to make friends with them, to show them how to shop, how to get them set up with couches and lamps, and they get a simple flat from the government, but they need a lot of help assimilating into culture here. And so somebody that comes alongside and does that work and befriends them and shows them and helps them with English and so forth is in an excellent position to also share the love of Christ in the gospel with those people. And we found high responsiveness in some groups. We're really excited about expanding this area further. So, and those are our main, we also are working some in student, foreign student ministry, where the thought is that we minister to foreign students while they're here, and then they go back. And they may go back and plant churches or spread the gospel there. So that's yet another strategy that we're pursuing. Okay, at this time, let's bring up Tim and Margie Benedum to tell us about their ministry.
I assume I know how to use this. This is my wife, Margie, and she's not speaking. I'm just going to go ahead and go through some of the things today. First of all, we just really want to thank everybody. This church has been super supportive of what we're doing. They've been behind prayer support, financial support. In fact, Xenos is just getting quite a cool reputation in Cambodia, but a good reputation of being generous, being loving, and being giving to the people of Cambodia. And I think it's just really cool and pretty exciting. The time's limited, so I kind of wanted to get right into what our topic was today. And we're talking about national workers at Mercy Medical Center in Cambodia. And the question really was posed is, how does MMC equip and release Native Christians to work towards an indigenous church planting? Before I get into this, there are a lot of new faces since we've been gone. Just a quick background of where Margie and I, basically, we've been on the field for 8 years. Five of those years, I was the country director for World Team in Cambodia. Last year, I stepped down as the country director and now I'm full-time at Mercy Medical Center. My official capacity is I'm the medical director, and Margie is head of communications and partnership support. However, more importantly, we feel like MMC really is our arena to carry out our first calling of discipleship, of being a disciple of Christ, where we can influence Cambodia to impact Cambodia for Christ. I won't spend a lot of time on this diagram, but it kind of gives you a perspective of how that really works. Where the foreign missionary, the foreign culture intersects with the home culture. There's influence, there's impact, and then that bicultural bridge where you've got the foreign culture and the national culture then goes on and the national culture impacts their sphere of influence, and then that sphere of influence impacts the other, because all of us have different spheres of influence, even the nationals themselves. So we work, these are the main people we work with our national workers. We have a Christian Cambodian staff. We have Cambodian students, our patients, and our national churches that we work side by side. From the standpoint of our national staff, we have 20 Cambodian staff, and this is kind of our workforce. We equip, we disciple, we train them medically, but spiritually as well. On Friday afternoons, we don't see patients, and we basically train them in church planting. We're going through a program called Kingdom Expansion. This whole year, it's a year focus on, how do we implement cell-based church planning through a medical facility. And our staff has really responded and is pretty excited about that. Just learning about lay leadership, local leadership, house churches, replication, all that stuff. And I think we're really excited about how that's going to pan out. We have a spiritual impact team. These are a group of Cambodians that work our waiting room. Okay, so patients come to our medical facility. They're waiting out there. They usually have family and friends. And they do a lot of biblical storytelling. Because a lot of our patients are illiterate. They also do one-on-one. They sit and they'll pray with people, talk with them. They also visit some of our inpatients. We've got a small inpatient ward. And we've had really over 100 people pray to receive Christ so far this year. So that's been pretty exciting. This spiritual impact team actually keeps track of the people who have professed Christ and those who are interested in more. We're able to give out some Bibles to people who can read, and we'll talk about follow-up in just a minute. But the cool thing is that, you know, a lot of these patients, with this animistic Buddhism where it's fatalistic because they can't really do anything about their situation because that's their karma, or they're fear-driven because they're just trying to appease all the spirits and their ancestors, they really come to see, when they really understand the grace of God, when they understand what Christ did for them on the cross, and he made all the offerings, I mean, it's revolutionary. They get pretty excited. They go back to their own villages, and they talk about Jesus to their family and their friends. Case in point was a woman who came to our facility sick. We were able to help her out. She went back to her village, really excited about who Jesus was. Samrat, who's part of our spiritual impact team, came back to their village. He preached the gospel. She had gathered a couple people in a couple different houses. That day, and that was a little less than a year ago, 20 people prayed to receive Christ. So a year later, Samrat going out there and encouraging and training, we have two cell churches going on. One averages 35 patients, 35 adults, and 20 children, and the other cell church averages 15 adults and 15 children, and they're reaching out to their neighboring villages. So it's been really a cool thing. So our patients become our church planters and our evangelists, and that's pretty exciting. We have a spiritual impact follow-up team, and we've really just gotten organized on this. I mean, I've worked part-time at this medical center really for almost the 8 years I've been there. And we've had people pray to receive Christ, but our follow-up has not been as good as we would have liked it. Over the past year and a half, we've really gotten strategic about that. This year, a guy named Kib Sokol, he's a Cambodian-American, he has been very instrumental in organizing this team. This team is composed of our Cambodian staff who kind of rotate through because we want everybody to get the piece of the action of spiritually going out, following these people up, continuing to evangelize, continuing to train, disciple, and that's been a really exciting thing. And so just over the past 3 months, Sokol has given us these numbers that 132 adults have professed faith in Jesus Christ in several different villages, that 135 children have professed faith in Jesus, and 16 people have been baptized, and they continue to train and equip the current four church plants from MMC. And this is just counting the ones just from our facility, not with other organizations. And so we have those two church plants in Bridge 23, and then we have one in Takayo and one in Kandal. And so that's pretty exciting about the fruit that's being born. We do have community health outreach teams where national missionaries go in. You know, we always have to get the approval of the Maypum or the Maykum, which are the village chief and the commune chief. And this is kind of the leftover of the structure of communism. And so whether you're Cambodian or whether you're an expatriate, a foreigner, you got to get permission to go. You just can't walk into a village and do whatever you want. And so we're able to get access into the village by these teams and allows us to engage the people. And if there's no believers there, to evangelize. If there's believers, to encourage and to train as well. And of course, we show the compassion of Christ. That verse that we had on the first screen, you know, Jesus sent them out to preach and to heal the sick. And we feel like we're doing the same thing following that pattern. We do training at our facility. So we work with nationals and train them, doctors, nurses, nurse assistants, pharmacists, and village healthcare workers. We've got a couple of healthcare workers at this point in time, but we want to expand that program even more, especially when we go out to where the new center is. We're going to be right down the street from Yoka. We've talked with Yoka about this. What a nice partnership or connection. As she brings people in to train at her facility, we can teach them in basic healthcare. They can go back to their village and be able to minister there, preach the gospel, as well as being able to serve their villages. It's interesting. There's a nurse practitioner at another organization that is doing some work on evidence-based herbal medicine, so we may be able to connect all this together and give them some affordable tools to really make an impact in their villages physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So we're really excited about that. The interesting thing is the government has a similar strategy. They wanted to train the traditional healers and basic health care so they can help their health care system, which their infrastructure has been totally destroyed. It's just horrible, the whole educational system. But the problem is that you know, the traditional healers are charlatans. And so they're just going to take advantage of the people, where we can train village health care workers who love God, who love their people, and can show the love of God. So we're excited about that and how that develops. Lastly, we work with referring partners. There's Christian organizations, missions, and churches that send their patients in. And what we'll do is continue to minister to them. Obviously, they hear the gospel. A lot of these people are non-believers. And we've had many testimonies where when the referring organization said, these people are churches, these people were resistant to the gospel, they got sick, they sent into our facility, they were able to see the compassion of Christ, and they came back and say, you know, we want to know more about Jesus, because we've seen the face of Jesus at this clinic. And so we're really excited about that. And well, I don't have the data there, only God knows that, how many people went back to their villages and prayed to receive Christ. But we've also seen churches being planted from that as well. I don't have time, but there was a real cool story about even a church being planted out of our waiting room that we didn't know about by another church. And that was really cool. We don't even know what's going on. But God does, and that's cool. So one of the Khmer pastors, I liked what he said. You know, he said, you know, you provide a pond that we can effectively fish out of. And I thought that was a very cool thing, and we really appreciate that. The other thing we've got going in Cambodia, and I just wanted to say a few things about the Friendship School, because I feel like that's a powerful opportunity to impact the Cambodians, because, again, the educational system being so badly destroyed. You know, completely different from some other countries. If you compared India and Cambodia, it would be like comparing oranges and apples. India's got a good educational system. Cambodia, horrible. And so they definitely need this. And what the Gessers are doing there is exciting. They're working through their national workers, doing that bicultural bridge that we talked about with the principal. There's Makara, who's been just instrumental, strong Christian, got a great testimony, and has been instrumental. And Chris has just done a marvelous job with Amy there getting that school together. The teachers, the local churches, Malai is one of the local pastors that's been intimately involved and then impacting the children and families. You know, it's just beginning. They've had the one grade last year. They have two grades this year. And I think it's going to have a huge impact. It's interesting. I'll end with this. That this one, this is a monk from Thailand, and he said, you know, if you guys would have come in and built some Christian schools, you probably would have won Thailand by now. I thought, wow, that's kind of an interesting statement. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but really, you know, we do need to be able to reach out to the needs of the community the way Christ did and preach the gospel. So I think that's, without further ado, I think that's good. And that's how we kind of work through nationals. And I'll bring up the next speaker.
Good morning. They said it would be on. Okay, it's on. My name is Patrick. My wife, Melissa, is here with me this morning. But She's not speaking either. It's the Asian thing. She was accusing me of, she had to sit behind me because she got in later. It's not true, but, you know. A little background. The Southeast Asia team has been on the field about 17 years. Melissa and I have been part of it for about 8. And we had a basic primary goal to see indigenous churches that are able to train their own people, to evangelize their own people, and to grow in grace, and to be able to show the love of God through those churches. Okay? So how did we do it? Original goal was to set up a team of, how do you do this? There we go. To set up teams of national workers. So we, as the Americans from Xenos, we don't try to interact with the believers. We are in a country that is predominantly Muslim. The state we live in has about 35 million people. And we don't try to set up churches where we are the pastors or we are the leaders. We recruit Christians from our country to reach the people in our state. Other areas of our country tend to be more predominantly Christian. We have worked by recruiting people from a local seminary, bringing them in and training church out of them. They're very traditional. Most of it is very European traditional, so even way more traditional than most American churches. So we want to strip it down and convince them of what the gospel says. Not what does the pastor do, not what does he wear or what building he meet in, but what does the gospel say? We train them to understand the love of God for Muslims. This place has historically had a lot of problems between Christians and Muslims. Most of them are economic and social as opposed to religious, but they do break down along those lines. And so they, both sides, the Christians and Muslims, have a lot of misconceptions about the other group. And we need to convince these believers that God loves the Muslims. And we train them to share the gospel in a way that's not offensive to the Muslims. So we use the Muslims' words for religious ideas, for God, even just statements like praise God. We choose the Muslim version so that people are not immediately put off by, oh, that's a Christian idea. I don't want to hear about that. So then what's our goal? Okay, we got it. Our goal is to see these Christian background believers gather groups, reach the Muslims, gather them into groups, disciple them in grace. Islam has a lot of similarities to Christianity in its expression, but it is entirely based on their ability to please God. And they don't have a concept for God accepts them as they are. And so we want them to train these new believers in grace. We don't care so much about the cultural baggage or the religious forms. We care about, do they understand grace? And then form them into groups. We want to see them formed into groups so that that can be a place for new believers to come, to grow, a place to train leaders, and begin to form a community that is safe for all of them to grow in. So how's it going? Well, when we got to the field about 8 years ago, there were maybe 30 or 40 believers that we knew of. Maybe 100 total out of the 35 million from all the groups. Because we honestly don't care if we do it. There are other groups there working, and they're having success, and we praise God. Okay? But over the last couple of years, we've begun to see a change. In a group that has historically been extremely resistant to the gospel, they're starting to listen and consider what Christ says. There are people believing. From our network of believers alone, we have well over 100 people and in a country where there's never been more than one or two or three in any one area at any one time. We've been able to partner with a believer from the people group that we're going to. He himself and his network have reached well over 400 people and have dozens of groups. We didn't have anything to do with it. We're not trying to control it, but we're coming along going, you got something going on. God is with you. What can we do to help? And we're seeing the people that we reached begin to gather. Historically, it'll be one person. There's nobody to gather with, so they just join the traditional church. And it never goes any further. We're starting to see the Muslims join into groups and have their own group. One of the early goals we had was just to see a group of believers who were willing to reach out to Muslims in every county of our state. And 3 or 4 years ago, that seemed like a pipe dream, like we had decades to go. It's been done, not just by us, but by everybody there working. But there's a long way to go. If we took all of you guys and broke you into groups of 4 or 5 people, statistically in the United States, there'd be one Christian in every group. If we took this whole group, statistically, there's not yet one Christian in this group among our people group. Less than 0.1%. So while things are growing and expanding, and things are changing, and the growth seems to be accelerating, there's still a long way to go. So if we look at this picture, yeah, there's a long way to go. But the picture is also of what it's going to be like in heaven, because we know that our people will be there, and we are looking forward to the day. We are blessed and encouraged at the support we get from this church. And we just pray that it continues so that we can see God continue to work in Southeast Asia. Thank you.
All right, my name's Dave Glover, and I oversee the missions division here. And I have about 10 minutes to talk about East Europe and Taiwan and the Humanitarian Aid Fund and how you can get involved in missions. So hang with me. First of all, I want to talk about Taiwan, and I want to introduce our couples that are over there. It is a privilege to get to speak on behalf of them. First of all, we have Sean and Amy Gibson, and their two daughters, Devin and Saffron. They're located in the city of Jai. They were both these couples, the Gibsons and McCrackens, were deployed in 2000, so they've been over there for about 10 years. Tim and Jennifer McCracken are in the city of Taichung. Sometimes if you're on their e-group, you'll see that they're working out of a suburb, if you will, of Taichung called Taiping. So these guys have been there, again, 10 years and have been doing a great job. They're primarily focused on the working class people. And the working class is a group of people that really hold traditional Taiwanese values. They're very much into polytheism, animism, and ancestor worship. It's a pretty tough field to work. They consist of factory workers, you know, taxi drivers, shop workers. They run these small food stalls. They work incredible hours. You know, some of these folks work, you know, 12, 16, 18 hours a day just to make ends meet. There are, in the country of Taiwan, there's 23 million people. 15 million of them are considered working class, and only 0.5% of them are reached. So it's a daunting task. Mission agencies and the church, actually the Presbyterian Church, has been in Taiwan for 140 years. And there's still this large group of people, you know, roughly two-thirds of this country are essentially unreached. Now, the working class, they're an interesting group of folks. In general, the remaining population, the 7 to 8 million that... tend to be Christian. I think about 15% of that 7 to 8 million have been reached, but they have little or no interest in reaching out to the working class. The working class, Again, they work long hours. They like to drink. They like to cuss. They like to chew betel nut. They like to go to karaoke bars. Betel nut's a mild narcotic. And so the traditional church doesn't want anything to do with them. And it, you know, as Xenos, we're uniquely suited to reach out to this people group. So our folks, really, our team there is the first one that has really concentrated on reaching the working class people. And they've been able to persuade OMF, the largest mission agency in Taiwan, to focus on the working class people. And, you know, they've had, I'll talk about that in a minute, but a number of other ways to influence people to reach the working class. So the traditional church and methods have been ineffective in reaching this group. These folks do not, you know, want to go into a traditional church. They feel judged. They're not as well educated typically. And so what we've tried to do is set up wineskins that will help reach these people for Christ. We're pleased to say that, again, it's been some challenging work, and we've learned a lot over the last several years, but we have four small groups in place. Oliver here, the picture, this is a guy that just recently came to Christ and was baptized. We've got a lot of discipleship going. Each of our team members are discipling working class converts. And we've actually got just recently Sean Gibson, the team leader there. There's a guy that he's discipling. Let's see if I have his picture up here. Yes, Sam. He's discipling Sam, and Sam in turn has got a guy of his own. So we're starting to see just the beginnings of some multi-level discipleship. But again, it's pretty tough going. These folks live in tremendous fear of their ancestors. Maybe some of you, if you're on the Taiwan e-group, there was a short video that was sent out about Ghost Month that just completed last month, and where people go to great lengths to, you know, appease the spirits, to appease ancestors. And so the idea of leaving my religion to convert to Christianity is terrible. It instills a lot of fear. So continue to pray for these guys to come to Christ and to step up into leadership, praying for new leaders to emerge. As I mentioned earlier, our team has had quite a few training opportunities. Well, in general, the traditional church is not interested in reaching the class. There are pockets within each of these churches, people that are interested. They look around, they see there's this whole group of people in our country that don't know Christ. We need to do something about it. So our guys have done are running right now a 10-week class where they're providing training on evangelism, on how to reach the working class, how to set up wineskins that will make people more comfortable to come out and hear the gospel. And they also worked at local seminaries to, again, to provide training for people that are going through seminary at that time so that they can mobilize the church to reach this large unreached people group. Eastern Europe. That's Taiwan, Eastern Europe. We have two couples there. Mark and Laura came over in 1997, so been there for quite a while now. They've endured quite a few hardships. It's a difficult field. They've tragically lost their team leader a number of years ago, but these guys have continued to persevere and to make some great headway. Also, Fritz and Marianne and their boys. There's a lot of testosterone on this team with our families. We've got lots of boys. But they've all done a great job there. In Eastern Europe, there's been decades of persecution under communism. Some would argue that one of the most persecuted countries in recent history. Some estimate over a million Christians were martyred during the last several decades. So there's, you know, the communism, there's just, and under communism, just a rampant atheism, you know, just really no belief in God whatsoever. So it's been challenging, but by God's grace, we're really pleased to report that we have three indigenously led house churches, which is super exciting. So our team no longer even attends these home group meetings. They're completely run. These are some of the pictures of some of the leaders here. Completely run by indigenous people, and it's real exciting. The role that our team is playing right now is really thinking about an exit strategy. How do we completely turn this over and leave and let these guys run the church and take, really take ownership of reaching their city for Christ? What Martin has done is he's taken leaders from each of these groups. There's 7 leaders right now. He's brought them together in a leadership team, trying to establish a common vision. Actually, they strategically located these house churches at different places around this city so that we can kind of penetrate these different areas. And so what Mark's doing is working with them to develop a common vision so that they have this, and that they can work together to reach their city for Christ. So imagine yourself in a city of, I think it's a couple million, and you got 3 house churches. And so you're going to go out and you're going to reach the city. Whew. Big task. So we have this leadership team that's working really well. The goal would be a year from now that Mark runs this meeting, oversees it, helps them resolve conflict, create vision, all that kind of stuff. The goal would be that Mark would no longer be participating in this meeting in a year. So we can pray for that. We want to finish the job with the national leaders. They wanted me to thank you all, too, those of you that have given to the general fund and supported them. There's been a number of equipping resources that we've been able to help them get. There's been 5 Xenos books that have been translated, and we have a micro-publishing set up over there. And, just some great books that we've been able to put into the hands of these young believers and leaders. So that's been a good thing. We've got a small library, their study center, if you will, and an apartment there. And a couple points to pray about here. Right now, they're about 7 or 8 hours ahead of us. They're finishing up a retreat, and they knew they had 2 people that were getting baptized, and they were hoping for 4. So you can be praying that would have actually had those other 2 would have been convinced to get baptized. And then the other goal that these guys have is early next year, we would like to see each of these house churches plant. They have, again, these 7 leaders in place. They've got a really strong line of second-tier leaders that are ready to be raised up. So they would just really appreciate your prayers for that plant, for those plants to take place. Now, I've got a quote from Laura. She's going to be pretty mad probably that I share it, but I'll go ahead and do it anyways. And this is why probably some of our missionaries, maybe most of them will never be asked to quote something on the back of a book. But anyways, this is what Laura says. Each of you should be encouraged that all you hear about this morning is you're doing too. The front lines are just that. The front lines, and there is always a whole freaking army behind it. So I said, what would you want to pass on, Laura? And she said this. And you heard it from Patrick and Tim. I have the cool opportunity to talk to our missionaries a lot. They appreciate so much what we all do here, the prayer, the finances, all that stuff. And they just really recognize and have a deep sense of gratitude for the army, the workforce that's behind what they're doing on the front lines. All right, the Humanitarian Aid and Development Fund. I want to give you a quick update. You should have on your chair or little flyer there that talks about the different funds that we have available. Just by way of reminder, we started this humanitarian aid fund in 2004 with a fairly modest sum, as we had the desire to raise $75,000, which we did. And really, I'm excited to report that to date, just through the first couple weeks of September, from 2004, we've raised over $1 million to support these ministries around the world. So it's pretty exciting. Our goal for 2010 is $250,000, and I think we're around $135,000, so we have a way to go. So our ways to go, if you're interested, you can check out some of the options there and also look at the website, and it gives a little bit more description of some of the funds. Real quick, how can I get involved? As Dennis said, we'd really like to see the percentage of people that are, especially on the servant team, and the percentage of people that are participating and helping out in missions increase. Here's a couple ways that you can. First of all, we have regularly scheduled prayer meetings, and the next one is November 6th at the 4th Street location. from 10 to 11:30. The Johnsons and the Benedums are going to be there. They're going to be able to give more information about the work that God's doing in each of their fields. And this is a great meeting where you hear about a particular field, and then you have a chance to, there's, you know, all kinds of prayer requests. So it's a great time to come together and pray for our missionaries. And you get kind of the inside information that you otherwise might not get. If you're interested in financial and prayer support, you can contact Melissa Harvin. That's her email address there. If you're interested in missions and mobilization, you can contact Holly McCallum. She can give you all kinds of resources, like Dennis was sharing earlier, about just understanding missions, the theology behind it, how we work as a church to mobilize people for missions. And then there's each of the teams has an e-group, and where you can get regular updates on, you know, conversations that our missionaries have had with people, the different, all the things that are going on in the field. So I encourage you to join those. And then afterwards, you can stop by the missions booth. The Benedums will be there. We'll have Melissa and Holly, and they can answer any specific questions that you might have. So with that, we'll bring up Lef to talk about refugee resettlement.
A lot going on in Xenos Missions. Pretty cool. And one of them is refugee ministries. Dennis made a great point on the front end of this meeting. He said, you know, it's just like that God has brought the world to Columbus, that we don't have to leave our own neighborhood even to do mission work. And that's awesome, because it means that in a very hands-on way, all of us can be involved in the work of the World Christian Movement. I think that's really very sweet, not just in terms of giving money, but being involved with people from around the world, and that's going to shape the gospel to the nations. I love what it says in Exodus 22, 21. God is a missionary God, and he says to Israel, he says, to the foreigner in your land, welcome him, because you too were a foreigner in a foreign land. And I think, you know, that's exactly the heart of God. When Jesus talks about what does it mean to really respond in authentic faith to him, in Matthew 25, he says, I was a stranger and you welcomed me in. And so just that motivation of we give selflessly because God has given selflessly to us, that motivation really opens our eyes to see this is what God is about. And in terms of refugee work, that's something that we've really been doing in an ad hoc way as a fellowship for 25 years or more, really. And there have been Russian refugees settled here and other populations as well. A lot of you know that there have been hundreds of Bhutanese refugees settled here in Columbus by just, I think, the leading of the Spirit and the openness to meeting real needs. Danny Walker got plugged into that population. We now have between 80 and 100 Bhutanese meeting weekly for Bible study. They have their own CT here on Sunday morning. It's an awesome thing. It's a people movement of refugees here in Columbus. Now, last fall, we were talking about this incredible phenomenon at the planning retreat, and we were like, okay, so this is an amazing thing. This is something that we really need to get behind. How can we make this thing really happen? And so we began to explore the thought that while we can maybe expand the resources of bringing Bhutanese and other populations, Somalis, there's some thought that Hmong, who have a long history of responding to the gospel, might also be in refugee status and be qualified to be replaced here. People from the Darfur, also perhaps coming to Columbus. And we were thinking last year at the planning retreat, how can we facilitate that? How can we broaden our capacity in refugee ministry beyond the significant number of home churches that are already involved with it today? So we did a feasibility study over the course of many months and pretty much research from top to bottom. What would it look like for Xenos actually to be a refugee resettlement office with a formal relationship with the U.S. State Department and the capacity to bring in significant numbers, scores of refugees every year that we could serve, that we could rally behind, that we could welcome to this country, that we could help transition into normal life and to share the love of Christ with them. And that seems like that's a pretty good vision. And we got into the question, we began to research it, we looked at it from the standpoint of how much money will this cost. We looked at it from the standpoint of, do we have the personnel resources to really pull this off? And then the very important question, the third question is this a strategic initiative for us at this point in time? And that's where the real debate kind of has come down to, because there are already two refugee resettlement offices in Columbus. Our relationship with them has been historically very good. There is some question about whether or not these organizations, which are essentially secular, how happy they are with evangelical churches like ours, where people are not only sharing their resources, but sharing their relationship with Christ. There's been a little bit of a question about that. And that really has catalyzed the question of whether or not we could just do this on our own so that we don't have that uncomfortable relationship. But what has really come out, I think, as a result of this feasibility study is the thought that these groups continue to want to work with us and value that partnership. And so rather than reinventing the wheel, we have at this point set aside the decision to become a refugee resettlement office and continue working with the existing structures in the city, because that's the way the church can be the church. We can let administrative things be done by other organizations, and we can do that real hands-on relational work. So I think that's a good decision. It's a decision that we can revisit pretty much at any point, because we did the feasibility all the way up through the final kind of decision by the State Department to say, yes, you can do this work and we will be behind you. So a lot of groundwork has been covered. We can come back to that when we want to. But I think right now we're at a place where this is a ministry that's expanding. We're finding not only Bhutanese with their own indigenous CTs and home group Bible studies, we're seeing them also leach into some of our Anglo home churches as well. And there's just this beautiful sort of thing that's beginning to happen, where a whole population of sojourners is becoming settled in the land and a part of the broad body of Christ. That is so awesome and so beautiful. I'm telling you what. And there are more ethnicities right at our doorstep who fit into exactly this category, and people working hard among the Somalis and other populations. I think my time is just about over. But just if you have an opportunity to get involved by serving a new family or whatever, it will change your life. It will. It's something that families and home churches can take on, because, and which is awesome, because then you're forming relationship. Your children are seeing the world through the lens of the refugee. It's just, this is a total win-win environment. And I'm very excited for where the Lord's taking us in the future. And I'm done.
All right, thanks, Jim. I want to talk a little bit about domestic church planting. You may not be aware of that term. Something that I've been burdened about. I know some of you are burdened about this, and the leadership of our church is really burdened about it as well. When I say domestic church planting, I'm talking about groups of people or individuals, couples from Xenos, going out, going to a new culture, to a new location, to start an independent, thriving, self-sustaining church right here in America. Now, that may seem like kind of a strange thing. You know, Christianity seems to have taken root pretty well in the United States. Well, I'll tell you, here's three reasons why I think we need to get into this, and why we think we need to. First is, we need more churches like this. I'm not ashamed to say that. I love this church. I can't think of too many places I would have come to Christ. There are a lot of churches I'd never enter for a variety of reasons. And I praise God that the Lord raised up a group of people like the folks in Xenos to reach people like me. You know, I think about what we're good at. What's unique here is there's this deep commitment to the Word and an ability to really reach people that are totally not into the church. You don't see that combination very often. There's also, I think, one thing that we have here that's awesome is not just equipping people and filling them with knowledge, but releasing them and mobilizing them into meaningful ministry. Now, I'm not saying we're like the best church out there, that there aren't other great churches. There are. There are so many other good churches, churches that we can learn from. But, I mean, just think about it. How many times have you been thinking about a cousin or a relative and been like, man, I wish there was a church like this, like Xenos, that I could direct them to? I'll tell you, in a lot of places, there just aren't. And so I think we don't need to be ashamed of that or poor mouth our group. God's done something special here. You think about folks coming out to the Summer Institute from all over the United States. I've talked to enough of them to know they're not just coming here because we have awesome plenary speakers. They're coming here because they want to learn what we're doing, because God has done something special in this fellowship. So I think that it'd be awesome. I mean, just imagine having places that have our values and that are similar to us operating all over the United States down the road. I think that'd be sweet. Secondly, Christianity in the United States is in decline. A lot of people aren't aware, but it's in major decline. Let's just talk about Ohio for a second. In Ohio, over the last 18 years, there's been a 9% increase in the number of people that would say they have no religion. And during that same time, the category that includes evangelicals has gone down by 8% over the last 18 years in this state. The fastest growing religious group in the United States, across the whole country, are people that claim to have no religion. That's the fastest growing religion in this country. So there is a need. And it's not just at the individual level. Churches are also in decline. About 2,500 churches are planted every year, which seems great. But then you realize at least 3,500 churches are closing their doors. So there are a lot of churches in this country, but the total number is gradually going down. So there's a need. There's a huge need. And I think the other thing I would throw out here is, as far as why we need to get into this, is haven't we seen over the last few years that there are receptive groups of people out in this country under our nose who are ready to respond to the gospel? I mean, we've talked about the Bhutanese that God prepared in refugee camps. I've been involved in a work with low-income kids called Renegade that we meet down at 4th Street. We started with a couple kids in the summer of 2008. Now we've got almost 60 kids. A lot of them had come to Christ of all ages. And when I drive to pick up these students, there is place after place after place, neighborhoods, street after street, where there aren't any good churches. There's no good vital witness. Here's a third thing to think about. There are huge chunks of the United States that are underserved by churches. If you read Ed Stetzer's book, he talks about multi-housing communities. A multi-housing community is like a dormitory or a trailer park or an apartment complex where lots of people live in a close space. He said that about 40% of our population, 100 million people, live in multi-housing communities. And of those 100 million, he argues that only about 5% are connected to a church. That leaves 95 million people. That's a little higher than Den stats. But he argues just in multi-housing communities, 95 million people who aren't connected to the church. That's a giant unreached people group. And you know, they aren't served well because they're often low income. And pastors out of seminary that want to make a good wage go look in the suburbs or, you know, wealthier places to work. I just got back from Chicago last week, and I'll tell you, there are huge forsaken areas of urban centers that are neglected, where there's no real vital Bible-believing church working these areas. Or go drive along the Ohio River. You know, go take that drive along the Ohio River, and you'll see town after town, living in economic decline, a lot of times grinding poverty, substance abuse, hopelessness, where there are no in many of these towns, there aren't vital Bible-believing churches working these areas. And I'll tell you, if there were, many of those residents would be walking with God. So, you know, you think about this topic, and what I'm trying to argue is right here, not just in Columbus, but different places in the United States, there are fields to work. There are people to reach. There are churches that must be planted. And that's something that we should be involved in. So I want to, obviously God's not calling everybody here to do this. God doesn't want everyone to move out and start a new church somewhere. But he is calling some of you. Some of you have been prompted by the Lord. Or, you know, some of you daydream about, well, what would it be like if we moved here and started a new work? And God's been nudging you to consider doing something like this. So let me just give you three things, you know, to work with if you're one of those people. First one is take those thoughts seriously. Take it seriously. God loves lost people, people that aren't like us, people that don't live here. And he wants us to follow him in obedience and go move out and bring the gospel to other places. The second thing I would say is get educated. We're going to be offering a church planting class later this fall. Of course, on domestic church planting. I'll give you the specifics in a minute. You can also go to our website, type that phrase into the search box, and it'll pull up a pretty extensive paper on different aspects of church planting, like how to know if you've been called, you know, what the biblical basis for church planting is, how other groups have done it, what would it look like practically, step by step, to start a new church. You can go learn about it. The other thing I would say is get some advice. Sit down and talk with people that know you well and share your dreams with them. And let them know what you're thinking, but don't brush it off. It would be so cool if, you know, over the next 10 years, we sent out a few dozen couples or groups to go try this. You know, some of these efforts are going to succeed. Some are fail. They'll fail. It's just, you know, we've tried this, and it's not easy. God never said this would be easy, but this is work worth doing. And I know that God wants some of us here to consider doing it. Now, one thing we can all do right now, as far as this whole issue goes, is we can pray. We can pray that God would begin raising up church planters to go out from this church to start new churches and new places. We can also pray for church plants that we've already sent out. You know, we have planted churches in Cincinnati, near Cleveland, and over in Dayton. Got people trying to start works and grow works there. They shouldn't slide off our radar screen. We need to keep those guys in our prayer. And we should also pray for folks that are already doing this that you may not be aware of. You know, Donald O'Mahuna's in Dublin, Ireland. He's trying to get a group off the ground. We've got another group that's trying to get off the ground up in Delaware. The Harveys and the Wolvertons are thinking about ways they could get a whole new independent church up off the ground out near Delaware. You know, we've talked about Joe and Aaron McCallum and the work that they're doing in Newark and out in West Jeff. They need support for that. There are people that are already doing this. There's also not just people in our church, but there's people that have been inspired by Xenos, exposed to our website, and on their own are trying to do this. There's a group of students in Belfast, Ireland, that are totally into what we're doing here. They just spent some time visiting our church. They're trying to implement a home group network over in Belfast. There's a girl named Claire who's alone in Paris, and she's trying to get a Xenos-style home group going there. She needs to be prayed for. There's a group of girls in Windsor, Ontario, and they sit around and listen to Xenos teachings. They're trying to get a Bible study and a home group off the ground. I'll tell you what, you start to pray for this, like I've been praying for it, and you realize God's committed to planting churches. He's already doing it, and he'll continue to do it whether we're aware of it or not or interested or not. This is part of what he does. This is his strategy to plant churches, to form Christians into disciples of Christ. This is going to happen whether we want it to or not. We just need to cooperate with him and get on board with it. You want to do that slide, Jer? All right, here's a couple things you can do. Just wanted to make sure you walked out of here with something practical. Take your burden seriously. You know who I'm talking to. If you felt God nudging you, take it seriously. We have a church planting prayer meeting that's been meeting for about 6 months
on the first Friday of every month from 4 to 5 p.m. at the 4th Street Cafe. Leslie Hetrick and I have been trying to get people out for that. We have prayer updates we can send you. If you send me an email, I'll send it to you. If you can't make our meeting, you can pray at home or bring this into your home group prayer meeting. There's a class, like I said, on domestic church planning that'll start Wednesday, November 3rd, so you can dive in while your interest is high. And then Leslie Hetrick wrote a master's thesis on Xenos' role in domestic church planning. It's a really great kind of vision-generating paper on how we could really expand what we're doing here. If you email her, she'll send you a copy. All right, well, thanks for your time.
Well, I guess we have a few minutes to entertain some questions or comments. There's microphones up front. You got to come and speak in one of those. And start lining up. First come, first serve. Could we get that mic turned on?
One of the other couples that is doing dimensions work is the Dyers up in South Dakota. And they've been doing that for a while. So just, I'm not sure how many people are aware of that.
A couple from Xenos working with Native Americans in a reservation up in North Dakota, yeah, that's true, or South Dakota. Okay.
Can you clarify, was there a push a few years back, like we're not going to send, we're just going to let nationals do missions overseas? Was that, can you clarify where that's at now? Are we still sort of just sending trainers or... What's the thinking there?
Well, we've always held that the purpose of Western missionaries is to win, equip, and release indigenous missions. That's been World Team's philosophy ever since we've been with them. And so we're continuing in that. No, we have not said that we're not sending. We have said that we are sending, and that we're sending, in fact, we're sending two of the best workers in this church. We couldn't think of a better couple, more qualified to send than them. So we are sending, and we also are emphasizing empowering and releasing indigenous workers, whether we train and release them or others do. Like in the case of Yoka, she's recruiting and training and releasing them, and we're fine with that. We'll go through her. We'll go through IGL. It's the body of Christ is the world church, so we can work, you know, and it's just as much a missionary if they go from there to there as if they go from here to there. So we're doing both.
As far as the terms are using, is there a difference between like a Somalian refugee in Columbus and then just a regular Somalian in Columbus? Would be the first question.
There's a regular flow of Somalis who have refugee status into Columbus, but there's also been, for quite a number of years now, that they have become naturalized. And so they've got either green cards, which is permanent status, or they've actually become citizens.
Okay.
So it's both.
And then you talked a little bit about we're working with Somalian refugees. Is there any church in Columbus that's, because we have a huge Somalian population, and there's, you know, several of those large housing units, like a couple on the west side, one in the short north area, that are a lot of Somalians and who are Muslims. Is there any church in Columbus who's actually focused on reaching those people that you know of?
Well, actually, where's Debbie Campbell? So, stand up, Debbie. All right. Debbie's connected with a network of churches in the Columbus area who are doing outreach to the Somali population. So,
okay.
You two, she's wearing yellow. She's yellow, okay? Go talk to her.
All right, thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks so much for doing this meeting today. I really appreciate just a opportunity for so many people to hear about what we're doing. And I think it was really cool that we had Yoka come and she got to talk to a couple CTs. I mean, a whole group of people at a meeting that, you know, people are going to be there. I know it's been a challenge over years to get people out to these, like, quarterly prayer meetings. I mean, you usually have your faithful 40 folks that show up and your, different mission team prayer meetings. You'll have your 9 or 10 people every month come. But I think it'd be so cool if we could have, as our missionaries are home, give them CTs, give them a meeting that we know that people are already coming to, instead of trying to get people to come to an extra meeting, which it just seems like it's been sort of an uphill battle there. But so thanks so much for doing this. I really, this was awesome.
All right.
Hi, what was your name?
Patrick.
Patrick, okay. When you were talking about the Muslim groups, the way you spoke about it, it still seemed like these believing groups, they still consider themselves to be strongly Muslim. What is their perception of their, like, belief once becoming believers?
They're really, in Islam, there really isn't a separation between your religious beliefs and your cultural identity. So we as Americans are Americans, and maybe we're Christian or maybe we're not. And so our goal is to, as much as possible, leave their cultural identity alone and only challenge and only address the things directly that are in opposition to grace. So if they go to the mosque, why? If they go to the mosque because God will be angry at them, if they don't, that's a problem. But if they go to the mosque because that's where their non-believing friends are, that's fine. So it's, we don't care if they call themselves Muslims. We don't care if they call themselves Christians. I mean, Christians wasn't a term Christ gave us, but outsiders gave. And those barriers between the Christians and Muslims are so entrenched that to call yourself a Christian would immediately ostracize you from everybody you knew. And so we're more concerned with their core beliefs than the outward manifestations of those. And so we're more interested in, why do you pray? Why do you fast? And what's your relationship with God then? How do you pray? How do you fast? And things like that. So we try not to get caught up on the terms and the outward forms, because historically, when missionaries have worried about those sorts of things, they just go underground. So if you look at the Caribbean and South America, the Catholicism there is so mixed with voodoo because the Catholics said, you can't do that. And they said, okay, and then they went home and did it in secret. And then after the outsiders' influence waned, it resurfaced. And so our goal is to get at their heart beliefs and work outward from there. The way Christ said, you know, don't wash the outside of the cup. We want to wash the inside of the cup with grace and see what happens from there.
Okay, so you've got that inkling or itching to at least start thinking about maybe going on a mission trip, or maybe looking at the wider aspect of maybe going out on a mission like some of you have done. But your spouse does not. Where do you go from there? Because I keep getting stopped.
Both of you have to want to do it, and it would be terrible to go with one of you feeling called and the other one not. So a calling is when he calls both.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Prayer, that's where it's at, and just really seeking the heart of God, and he'll move the heart of the spouse if that's truly the calling, because being unyoked and going to the mission field is could be really a big problem. So yeah, I think that's the key thing, is getting in the Word together, praying together, seeking. That's what Margie and I did, and then things became clear.
Thanks.
And I think too, broadening your idea of what that would mean. So like the domestic missions is way less scary to most people than international missions. Or even the student ministries at OSU that go on, or the refugee. There's ways in this country with so many people coming, whether refugee status or immigrants or students, to get involved in what's going on in the world that you don't have to leave to be involved in it. And also, what about prayer letters from the missionaries that are out, the prayers from the updates from the domestic missions group, and just really getting your spouse involved, and that burden may grow.
I wondered if
Dave or Jim, you could share for a minute what's gone on with Haiti and maybe the vision or goals there. There have been short-term trips. I know Mac's getting ready to go. There's people in Columbus. Maybe just a minute on that.
Wait, Jim was just there. Why don't you talk about it?
We kind of feel like maybe it was providential we got involved with Haiti when we did, because they sure need us now. And there are still over 1 million people in Port-au-Prince living in tents. And it's a disaster, you know. So what is happening is that World Relief, and we've got a partnership with World Relief that we're in the third or fourth year of now. They've had to change the programs that they've offered because there's no more communities through which to operate. And they really have gone full bore into emergency relief type stuff, digging freshwater wells, things like that. So the money that we send to them, which has been substantial this year, is very important. It's really making the difference between sick children and unwell children, things like that. We've also come alongside Dr. Marquette and the King's Medical Center down there, which has just been complete. There's a lot of need for medical care and dental care, so we're going to continue sending resources his way. There are a couple of other linked churches as well in Jacmel, in Léogan, and in Port-au-Prince, three cities right along there, the coast, that were just devastated by the earthquake. And they're beginning to resurface, and some of the Christian leadership there is putting communities back together. We've had a chance to go down there three times since the earthquake and have begun to participate in the forming of these communities. I'm pretty excited about that. I feel like that's awesome. Mac's going
Monday.
And you know, there's just a lot of work to be done. It's easy to get down there. There's no jet lag because it's all the same time zone. I really feel like we just need to stay in the fight with our brothers and sisters down there. It's been really good.
And we've really been fortunate. We've been connected with a group called Lumiere Ministries. That mm-hmm. They do primarily medical ministry, but they've also do a lot of construction. And, of course, there's lots of construction and rehabbing things to do right now that has made it relatively easy for us to get down there fairly quickly. They do a lot of the logistics, including ordering tickets and scheduling our time there. So I think that's been providential. We'll be connected with them.
It's a cheap, short-term mission. All right.
Hey, I just want to thank you guys for doing this today, and I hope that it's a regular thing. You know, like, it seems like the FST for missions. It's very cool.
All right.
I also wanted to share, I'm one of those individuals that benefits from this church. I work in the background for the same organization as the folks in Southeast Asia, and I got to spend time this summer with about 400 workers and hear about similar initiatives going on in North Africa amongst Muslims, North Africa, South Asia, Central Asia, as well as Southeast Asia. And our guys are a real model for what's going on there, and have really benefited the whole missions community. And I was sharing about the history of missions in our church with a guy who had just got kicked out of a country for being, he'd been there for 25 years, lost his visa. And he said, you go back and share with your leaders. You know, they're the generals of this army. You know, they work for the commander in chief. You know, and I just want to encourage you. You know, there are casualties, but there are also great victories, and we know the end game. We know who's going to win. So, thank you.
Amen.
Yeah, thanks for doing this morning. So I have like a little exhortation for the adult groups in this church that are languishing. International friendships. There are about 1,000 internationals, some of the best and brightest, sharpest people from their countries coming here to Ohio State, and they are desperate to meet with people, to practice their English, just to come and be invited into a home for a meal. It's incredible. There is a waiting list of people from these other countries just to be invited to get together and hang out and have coffee. And so some of the groups, some of the adult groups that are languishing and like, gee, we wish we could drum up some action. Here's some action right here for you. They want to meet with you. They want to come into your home. They don't care if you're a dork. So it's amazing. Vicki Schroer has really been spearheading some great work here. You want to get in touch with her about how you can get involved. So don't sit there twiddling your thumbs if you're in an adult group. There is action to be had. And where is Etienne Kasasa? Stand up. Where are you? There he is, right there. If you want to talk about the amazing work that God can do with international students, go talk to him. His parents were atheists when they came here, and they are doing some revolutionary work in Chile. And all the Spanish outlines on the website, the Xenos website, his parents, former atheists, have translated Gary and Dennis's outlines into Spanish.
Dennis,
I think
it was.
You want.
Thanks. I think Dennis said earlier that something like only 40% of servant team members are supporting our sent missionaries, if I have that right. So I just wanted to commend the work that like the Benedims and some of our other sent missionaries are doing. My wife and I support five different missionary families. And we had the great privilege to go on the Cambodia trip last month. But even, my wife and I sometimes have wondered, is our money being used for good things? Is it really helping to reach people for the gospel? Would it be better for us to support indigenous missionaries or just give the money straight to the poor people somehow? And being able to go to Cambodia and see firsthand what the Benedims are doing there and other groups there like Resource Development International, which my little group work with. The synergistic effect that the relief work they're doing has for the gospel message is incredible. And, you know, one of the things that they talk about a lot over there is providing sustainable relief too, not just hands out, and the role that does have the synergistic effect has with the gospel. I think it's pretty incredible. Like, I was amazed that Tim and his group, they provide training to the medical students and staff there that they couldn't get anywhere else to help them, training they couldn't get in their own country to meet the needs of the people there. RDI, the group that I worked with, they have this thing called the Bridge Program, where students who get an environmental science degree or engineering degree from the Cambodian University, they can't go to graduate school somewhere else because their degree is really not worth anything in Australia or the United States. But they're helping with this bridge program, give them additional training and recommendations so they can try to get into a graduate program abroad, get high-level training, then come back to their country and help with this relief work and help increase, you know, the spread of the gospel. And I was just amazed, and so I'm convinced more than ever that my money is really doing great things there, that God's using it, and I feel very privileged to be a part of it. So,
sweet.
Thank you. All right. We're almost out of time, and we want to save a little time for prayer, so we'll go a couple more, and that's going to have to be it.
I'm sorry, I don't have a question, but I heard some news this morning that was really exciting, so I wanted to share this testimony, because I learned about IFI, International Friendships, last year, and was really excited about the opportunity to reach out to international people without having to actually travel. Because I just love internationals. But so we received two people, hosted them for a few days, and really there was no interest in relationship. And so I almost gave up, but God provided another opportunity, and our third person that we hosted came from Taiwan, and at the time she was not a believer, but through the time that she spent with us, and then got connected with someone from the fellowship to live with them, started coming to Xenos, became a believer, now works with Mike Sullivan and the Renegade team, heads up a class there, and she is just speaking the gospel wherever she goes. And then this year, we received two women from China, and again, not believers, but they've gotten connected with our friend from last year, from Taiwan, and now this tomorrow morning, one of them is coming to CT because of their connections. It's just very exciting.
Praise the Lord.
I really feel lifted up by hearing what God's doing in all these ways. And I think it was Mike talked about the multi-unit housings and communities like that, where there might be mental health issues, drug dependencies, alcoholism, things like that, which can be very difficult to work with people that are living in that poverty and that brokenness. And I wanted to ask for prayer for God's leading, how to reach those people in better ways. There's a housing unit two blocks from the 4th Street facility that's for people with mental health, low income, alcohol, drug addiction. And I know someone that used to live there, and she has come to Christ, but she's still trapped in the lies that come through in those many ways. So I just want to ask for prayer.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.